Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Corporate Vice President Brian Harry.
Thank you very much. So I thought I'd start off today by telling a little story. And my story starts with an admission. I'm strange. Some of you probably know that on the side, I'm a farmer. I have spent, I've spent 20 years at Microsoft being a technology guy, and a few years ago, I decided to pick up farming as well. And that's kind of how I spend my weekends. So my sort of technology life and my farm life collided this last weekend when a friend of mine who is an MVP, Microsoft MVP from Australia, came to visit me. He wanted to experience a weekend working on a farm. So we were out in a field fixing a fence, and he said to me, he said, "You know, Brian, I didn't start out in software. I was an accountant." I'm like, "No, I didn't know that." "Yeah," he said, "you know, I started the job, and I pretty quickly decided I didn't like it. Every month, the beginning of the month, a packet of paper would arrive for me in the mail with a long list of the tax law changes that I had to now go learn and figure out how to change what I was doing to sort of abide by." It's like, "Oh." He said, "I didn't really like that. I wanted to learn a skill. I wanted to go study something that I could get good at, and then I could just keep doing it. So I picked software." I'm like, "That's an odd choice." He said, "Yeah, now instead of, you know, once a month getting a packet of paper in the mail that I had to go learn, now every day I get new stuff that I have to go learn." And I thought it was sort of an interesting insight into the world of software, that sort of the one thing that we deal with more than anything else is change. Our lives are constantly changing. The technology is constantly changing. The way we build software is constantly changing. And my talk is about evolving software practices. Now, the video you just saw was from Dominion. And, you know, Dominion is in sort of entertainment vehicles. And you wouldn't think that that would be a business where sort of modern software development practices was key to their competitive advantage, but it is key to everything that we do. So if there's one thing about change in the software business that sort of is the biggest, and that is the rate of change itself is constantly increasing. The last 10 years, there was a huge push into agile software development practices. And that was really focused on how do I make development teams efficient, self-forming teams, getting directly engaged with the customer, iterating quickly, delivering in small increments. And it really helped us get a lot better at the practice of software development. But that sort of hit a wall at some point. Our ability to produce software out of the development team was dramatically faster than our ability to consume that software into the production environment. There was fundamentally an impedance mismatch between what we were doing in our development teams and what we were doing in our operations and production teams. Out of that impedance mismatch was born a new practice that we now call DevOps. DevOps kind of has three key components to it that I want to talk about today. The first is continuous delivery. And that really is, so we've got this dev team cranking out lots of new value. How do we get those bits out of the developer's hands and directly into customers' hands? What has to happen? There's got to be some testing that happens. There's got to be some pre-production stuff that happens. There's got to be some automated deployments, some release management. How do I do that? And how do we take all of the friction out of that process so that what the developer is creating gets into customers' hands quickly? The second thing I called continuous monitoring. And that is, now that we're able to push software really rapidly into production, how do I know what's happening in production? And how do I know that I'm working on the right things that my customers like? They like the features that I'm shipping. The application is stable. When it's not, how do I find out what's wrong with it? How do I fix it? And how do I make sure that I'm iterating rapidly on the right things in production? And then if you have these two things, first, the ability to deliver software quickly to production, and second, the ability to get good information out of production, it enables a new way of working, sometimes called hypothesis-driven development. Whereas rather than spend a bunch of time doing focus groups and customer studies and market research, now I can instead essentially use my product as customer research. I can come up with an idea. Hey, I've got an idea for a new capability. If I do this, then customers will do X. They will buy more of my product. They will spend more time with my product. They will, whatever it is I want my customers to do. I come up with that hypothesis. I build some very small increment of software, get it deployed into production rapidly, watch what my customers actually do with that software, learn, develop a new hypothesis, and iterate. And then it becomes about cycling very rapidly. All right. So before I get into some features that I'm going to demo, some capabilities that enable this scenario, let me just step back for a second, talk about where we are with ALM today with Visual Studio. We have two main products that are part of our application lifecycle management offering, Team Foundation Server and Visual Studio Online. In the end, they're really the same thing. It's the same team. It's one code base. Team Foundation Server is for your on-premises solution. It's sort of private cloud. And Visual Studio Online is public cloud. We host it for you, keep it up to date, et cetera. In general, we introduce new features first in the private cloud and then in Visual Studio Online and then move them into Team Foundation Server. But over time, these two things are ultimately converging on the same set of capabilities. And they provide a pretty comprehensive set of application lifecycle management capabilities from source control, agile planning, test case management, continuous deployment, load testing, application insights, lab management. It's an awfully large set of capabilities. And we integrate it with other key products, both from Microsoft and outside Microsoft, including Office, System Center, SharePoint, et cetera. Now, historically with Team Foundation Server, we've had this pretty broad offering. But if you said, hey, I want to use this one, we did such a good job integrating it across the various capabilities, you kind of then got pulled into all of the other capabilities. And you might say, hey, I already use maybe Trello for managing my work boards. And I'd really like to use some of the TFS features, but keep using that. So earlier this year, we kicked off a new integration mechanism for Visual Studio Online and ultimately Team Foundation Server based on REST, OAuth, and service hooks that enables us to integrate with a huge number of third-party products. We've got dozens of customers that we've done sort of direct integration with and then have sort of indirect integration by just adhering to industry standards with literally hundreds of third-party products that enable you to integrate them with Team Foundation Server and into your overall workflow and Visual Studio Online as well. And in fact, I'm going to show you a demo a little bit later of some pretty cool stuff we're doing with GitHub. And then, like you, we're pressed to deliver value as rapidly as we possibly can. In the last 12 months, we've shipped 4 updates to Visual Studio and Team Foundation Server. And of course, we ship Visual Studio Online every 3 weeks. We've also delivered some really cool features like pull requests, work item trend charts, wiki pages, the REST, OAuth, and service hook extensibility mechanisms that I talked about, and tons more. So it's evolving very, very rapidly. Okay, so now back to DevOps. Let's talk a little bit about what we've done recently and what we're announcing today. So the modern application lifecycle has a bunch of activities in it. The fundamental activities we have to do don't change. We still have to do them. How we do them, when we do them, who does them, those things change a lot, but they all sort of fit in somehow. But the fundamental characteristic of the modern application lifecycle is that rapid iteration. How do we get through all of these activities very rapidly and very incrementally? So the first of those activities I wanted to talk about is continuous delivery. And as I said, that's about getting the bits directly from the developer's hands and into production. If I'm going to do that quickly, I have to think about the challenges that I face. So the first one is provisioning environments. All right, that goes from an individual developer sitting at his desktop or her desktop needing to be able to provision test environments in various configurations to validate that the changes they're making work, to test organizations that need to be able to rapidly set up and tear down environments with new builds, up to, in an extreme case, automated provisioning of production environments as well. I also need to be able to orchestrate my release pipeline. So for sort of a relatively simple app, I might have a continuous deployment triggered by every check-in that sort of automatically flows into the production environment. For a sufficiently large-scale, complex, mission-critical application, you're likely to want more than that. In fact, in Visual Studio Online, for everything we're going to flow through to production, we have 7 environments that it flows through. The first one is a pre-production environment that the QA team will do some validation on. The second one is what we call a canary environment, which is an actual production environment running on production infrastructure, running against all the production databases, et cetera, and available in the cloud publicly, but with a relatively small set of accounts on it so that we can test the changes in a controlled production environment before we start rolling them out to our broad customer base. And then we've got 5 more production environments in various geographies around the world, and we roll our changes across those, giving us the ability to control the impact of those changes, stop the rollout at any time if we discover a problem, roll out a hotfix, et cetera. And then lastly, if you're going to be able to do this, you're going to need to make sure that you figure out how to handle quality, because what you don't want is a fast way to deliver bugs to production. And there's sort of 2 aspects to that. One is you're going to have to count on your developers getting it right. And you're going to have to figure out how your developers are going to make sure that when they check stuff in, it is ready to go to production. And the second is you're going to have to think about test in production. Some amount of your testing actually needs to shift to in the production environment. And the release management kind of model I just talked about helps you do that. So I'm going to invite Brian Keller to come out and help us with some demos to demonstrate how some of the new features in Visual Studio and Team Foundation Server and Visual Studio Online can help you do this.
Great. Hi, Brian. Hi, everyone. So I'm going to address the 3 problems that Brian just mentioned. Let's start by talking about that problems that come with provisioning and automatically deploying your environments. One of the most common ways that DevOps teams really address this problem is by moving all of your configuration and infrastructure into code. That way you can provision all of those requirements alongside your code. And if I could just move over to my demo machine, please. Thank you. What I have here is my existing ASP.NET MVC shuttle application that you saw earlier. And what I'd like to do is start moving this into an infrastructure and configuration as code practice so that I can rapidly deploy that in the cloud. I'm just going to add a new project to this solution. And this is a new project type that ships with the new Azure SDK 2.5 that we're releasing today. I'll call it My Shuttle Deploy. And Visual Studio is going to give me several templates I can choose from to actually create the starting code that we're going to use for this infrastructure and configuration. I can also use the template wizard, which is going to inspect my existing solution and suggest a template for me. I did that. I'll just select my starting project, which is my web project. I have a database project that it's found for me. I'll click on OK, and this is automatically going to generate that cloud deployment for me, which knows everything it needs to be able to deploy everything from my solution directly into the cloud.
All right, that's really cool, Brian. You're sorry. Go ahead.
No, that's OK. I was just going to show everyone just a quick look at what's actually in that cloud deployment project. You'll notice that I have multiple topologies. For this particular template, we give you 3 topologies out of the box, but you can create your own, you can customize, and you can extend these. And what these really do is they allow you to represent the subtle differences that might exist in each one of these environments. And so in my development environment, for example, if I take a look at the JSON file, which represents that, you'll notice that I'm just using small virtual machines. And I also want to turn on the remote debugger. That's going to make it easy for me to debug directly from Visual Studio out into that environment. In the production environment, however, I'm going to use multiple machines. So I have an in-tier scale-out architecture. I also have medium VM sizes. And of course, I'm not turning on the remote debugger. So that allows me to write all of my deployment scripts once and just tweak configuration properties based on the needs of that particular topology.
That's excellent. All right, so this is really cool, and you know, it's great to see that developers can do this directly from their desktop, but realistically, for a large-scale mission-critical application, you're not going to have a developer inside Visual Studio hitting deploy and it's in production. What you need to be able to do is orchestrate this into a release management process. Now, about a year and a half or so ago, we introduced Team Foundation Server a release management capability. And I'd like to announce that today we are now bringing that release management service to Visual Studio Online So you will also be able to orchestrate your releases with Visual Studio Online.
That's right. So as Brian mentioned, I can deploy everything directly from within Visual Studio, but what I'd like to show you is how you can use the release management service within Visual Studio Online. That gives you a little bit more fine-grained control of the approval workflows. And so to get started with that, I can actually reuse all the infrastructure and configuration as code artifacts from that My Shuttle Deploy project I just created. We have a new instant pipeline wizard that allows you to easily link the environments that you're using in the cloud directly to those pipeline stages. So for example, I'll link over to my QA and my production environment. I can run any additional configuration or validation scripts at this point if I wanted to. But at this point, I'm now going to tell Visual Studio, go create those pipeline stages for me in the cloud. I can now launch the same release management client that I've been using to manage my release pipelines with Team Foundation Server. And this is now going to connect up to Visual Studio Online, where we have our new release management service running for you. If I take a look at that configuration path I just created, I can easily customize this. So for example, if I wanted to require that anytime a release went into QA, Brian Harry had to sign off on that before it went over into our production environment, that's just a single property that I can set. Now that I'm in the release management client, I can also get very easy transparency over everything that's been deployed out to these environments. So for example, I'll click into all the historical releases here. I'll look over the last month. And I can double-click on one of these and easily see exactly what was happening when each one of these releases was being deployed. And so, for example, I can take a look at this deployment step, and I can see all the desired state configuration operations that are running against that machine. Desired state configuration gives you a declarative way of saying, my application requires IIS and ASP.NET 4.5. So it's going to inspect that box, and if it's not already enabled, it's going to go enable that for me.
Very cool. Thank you, Brian. You were going to show the...
How can we preserve quality, Brian?
Yeah, that's right. Thank you. So that's great that I can get the data, you know, my bits into production. But as I mentioned, the next problem is how do I make sure that I keep the quality high of those bits flowing into production? So, Brian, what do we have for developers?
Well, we all know that unit testing is important, but unit testing is one of those things like flossing. You know, we don't always remember to do it every single time. And so wouldn't it be great if Visual Studio could actually help you by creating great unit tests for you? And so we've introduced that as a capability of Visual Studio 2015. If I take a look at my business logic for my My Shuttle application, you can see we just have some basic route calculation business logic. It's really important for our My Shuttle application. I don't currently have any unit tests in here, so I'll just right-click and say, let's generate some smart unit tests. It's now going to analyze all of my code paths. It's going to try to give me a suite of unit tests that provides not only high code coverage, but also high arc coverage as well, which is really important for a unit testing suite. Right away, you'll notice that it's coming back and giving me some indication that I have some unhandled exceptions in my code. So that's value right away. Luckily, I was working on some validation logic backstage, so we'll just comment that out. And I can now rerun my smart unit test engine. It's now going to come back with a suite of tests, which hopefully will be passing, that we can then add to our project and test every time we build. And so if you look at this, you can notice that there's all these what appear to be random numbers that are being fed in as input parameters. That's actually the smart unit test engine trying to figure out how do I exercise the various code paths here.
Yeah, they're not randomly generated. They are, in fact, exactly the values necessary to execute all of the branches in your code to validate that you're covering all of your code.
Absolutely. And so what I can do is I can, without even providing any further correctness properties, I can just save the baseline of what this code does today, check that in as a unit test, and now anytime I deploy some code that might change that behavior, I can get a quick alert that says, hey, something that maybe a dependent library changed, now this has changed. That doesn't necessarily mean it's a bug, but it does mean I should go spend some time investigating that before this code makes its way out to production.
Very cool. All right, thank you, Brian. All right, so Brian showed you three things. First is the ability to describe your environment and your application deployment scripts as code, to manage it as code in terms of being able to manage change, versioning, auditing, and all of that stuff, and then to be able to automate those changes into many environments. It's repeatable, and it's reliable. That's the word I'm looking for. He also showed you the ability to orchestrate your release process. So as I said, in Visual Studio Online, we have about 7 different environments that we do this that we do our deployment into, and they're sequenced with, in fact, our release management solution. And each deployment has a set of automated tests that run, and some deployments have also a manual sign-off where someone in our QA organization or our operations organization signs off and says, yes, we have been running now in our Canary for 6 hours and we've not seen any significant problems. We're ready for the release to continue into the next environments. And in fact, if you were to look at VS Online, you would see, about a dozen and a half services, each with their own release pipelines, each sort of being managed independently through their release processes. And then lastly, he showed you the smart unit test feature, which is able to analyze your code and find out exactly what is the set of tests you need in order to make sure you've got complete coverage to hopefully catch any issues before they make it into production. All right, so that's sort of continuous delivery. That's how I get my code from my developer's hands into the production environment. But as I said, the next important step is, how do I get information out of my production environment back into my developer's hands so that they're working on right things and we're able to iterate rapidly and fix issues that come up in production quickly? So let's talk about some of the challenges there. The first is, how do I understand what's happening from a sort of performance and reliability basis inside my application? And, you know, in fact, I'll sort of relate that back to Visual Studio Online again. This is an area we focus really, really hard. We have very, very detailed telemetry that enables us to actually see on a customer-by-customer basis what experience that customer is having. What errors are they hitting? What performance are they seeing, et cetera? And allows us to actually act proactively to go look at customer problems before customers even report them. I talked a little bit about test in production, and that means you are going to have to be able to validate some amount of your software in your production environment, but you don't want your test result to be how many irate customers do I have calling me or tweeting about problems with my app, right? That's a pretty bad test result. You need to be able to actually see inside the app while it's running and discover the problems before your customers see them. And then secondly, great, I've got all this data coming out of my environment, but on a large scale app, this can be terabytes a day, literally. And you know, being able to sort of make sense out of all of that data is incredibly important. I've got to be able to winnow through all of that, find the handful of events, errors, exceptions, performance problems that are relevant and that I need to action on. The rest is all data I don't really need to look at. So how do I solve that problem? And then thirdly, I talked about this notion of hypothesis-driven development. I need to be able to understand what my users are actually doing, and even more importantly than what they're doing, how their behavior changes with respect to changes I make. I introduce a new feature. Did people start using it? I change the way something worked. Did people stop using it? These are the kinds of things I need to be able to understand. So once again, I'm going to turn it back over to Brian, and he's going to demo some cool stuff that we have to help with this.
All right. Thanks, Brian. I get back to the demo machine, please. Thank you. So you saw Nicole earlier showing the Azure Preview Portal, and you saw some of the Application Insights data. I just want to hit on a few of those points again, which is that the new Azure Preview Portal gives you a consolidated DevOps view. Here I can not only see the status of Azure and all of the resources that I depend on, I can also see all of the current estimated charges for my subscriptions. I can also take a look at my resource groups. And as Nicole mentioned, resource groups give you a way of kind of containerizing the individual resources that make up your Azure subscription and putting those into logical groups that you can then manage throughout different stages of the lifecycle. So for example, if I take a look at the production resource group, you can see the list of the various resources which exist in production. These happen to be the same resources I deployed as part of my environment in the earlier demo. So we have a very clean mapping here, and it makes it very easy for you to understand exactly what the state of these particular resources are.
I noticed one of the resources for this application is called App Insights.
That's right. So since the last year, when we first announced Application Insights, we actually realized there was a lot of value in bringing the Application Insights data that previously was in Visual Studio Online directly into the Azure Preview Portal, and that's what you see here. And so Application Insights is really designed to help you answer those three questions that Brian was talking about. Is my application available? Is it performing well? And are my customers successful with it? How are they actually using that application? And so if we take a look at each one of those questions in turn, let's start with, is my application available? Here you can see a scatter plot that shows some availability, and I have some errors here. Let me show you what's behind the scenes actually generating this availability data. You have a few different options. One is you can just ping a single URL on your site over and over again. And what's unique about this is you can actually determine which data centers from Microsoft's Azure data centers you want to generate those pings from. So everything might look great here in the US, but you have customers in Singapore who are having problems experiencing your web application. So that's important to know. But most recently, we also gave you support for being able to upload what's called a web performance test. Now, a web performance test, for those of you that have written these in Visual Studio, you know that it's a series of HTTP requests and a series of expected responses back. So it really allows you to model an end-to-end experience a customer might have when they are, you know, shopping for items on your website, for example. And so here you can see that you can hand off those exact same artifacts from your dev and test environments over to your operations teams, and these allow you to do really great monitoring in production. In fact, you'll notice that earlier, I had some simulated failures because I wanted to show you what happens when you have a failure. You get the results directly within the portal, and I can then easily open those up in Visual Studio and understand exactly what the response was as part of that particular test. So that can easily help me answer, is my application available? Now let's talk about performing for a moment. There's multiple characteristics of a well-performing application. The first is my application throwing a bunch of errors and exceptions? Right here, I have a graph that shows me any exceptions that were unanticipated in my application. And so here you can see that I can actually drill into all the HTTP exceptions. And for each one of these exceptions, we actually surface a rich, you know, property bag of information. So here you can see that I have a stack trace. I know exactly, you know, where this exception was being thrown. Hopefully, this gives the DevOps team everything that they need in order to rapidly understand this issue, fix the code, and turn around a fix back into production. Another characteristic of a well-performing application, of course, is that it's responsive. It performs quickly as customers expect it to. On this blade, I can actually drill in and I can understand where are my customers spending their time? Are we making a lot of calls out to some dependent SQL server? Is the time actually being spent on the client rendering poorly written JavaScript? So this gives me a very fine-grained control over understanding exactly where those bottlenecks are so I can make sure that my applications are well-performing. Finally, I want to understand what my customers are actually doing as they're interacting with my web application. And so here you can see what browsers they're using, what operating systems, all the screen resolutions. This can be very helpful input for the development and testing team as they ensure that they're building the experience that's right for those users. Now finally, we have a new capability we recently added, which gives you an integrated log searching. This searches the logs across all of your applications and gives you a console that you could easily search across and understand exactly what's happening from any of the popular logging frameworks. And so here you can see, for example, that these are all of the requests that I'm getting, and here are custom events. A custom event within Application Insights can be triggered with a single line of code, and as part of those customer events, you can actually send up any number of properties that you want to log. So for example, we might want to log a custom event every time a customer books a ride that we can use to then analyze later and understand exactly where my customers are and what kind of experience they had during peak hours when they were booking these rides. So that gives you a quick look at how Application Insights and the Azure Preview Portal work better together to give you this really rich 360-degree dashboard for managing and monitoring your applications. But I should also point out that even if your applications are not hosted in Azure today, you can still take advantage of Application Insights. Most of the time, you just drop in a few lines of JavaScript code and put a monitoring agent on your application, and you can instantly start getting that information right back into the same portal.
Yeah, regardless of whether that app is on Azure, on-prem, in somebody else's cloud, doesn't matter.
That's right.
Great. Thank you very much, Brian. All right, so what Brian showed is Application Insights helps you understand what is happening inside your application. provides you the rich tools to be able to search that, correlate stuff by the user that's experiencing it, the page, the session, all kinds of properties to help you dig into that information and establish the root cause and figure out how to fix it. And lastly, Application Insights provides you good insight into what your users are actually doing. What pages are they viewing? What sequence are they viewing them in? How much time are they spending in your application? How often are they using your application? How frequently do they come back to your application? All of those kinds of questions, Application Insights will help you understand. So hopefully, that's a good overview of what Visual Studio, Team Foundation Server, and Visual Studio Online can provide a set of capabilities that will help you accelerate your DevOps loop, remove the friction, and enable you to iterate very rapidly. So I want to spend a few minutes. All of that we just showed is available today in some form, either in the preview, in Update 4, in Visual Studio Online, available today. All of that's available today. But as I said, we are pushed, just like everyone else, to deliver innovation very rapidly. Visual Studio Online ships every 3 weeks. So 3 weeks from now, there will be a new version of Visual Studio Online, and it will have a bunch of new capabilities. So I wanted to take a few minutes just looking forward and talk about what are some of the key things that we have coming over the next, let's say, 3 to 6 months. So one of the things we've been focused on is really getting Visual Studio Online to a point that it is what I call enterprise ready, ready for any enterprise of any scale with any level of sophistication to use it. And we've done a bunch over the last year to help with that. Things like Azure Active Directory support so that you can link your corporate Active Directory to your Visual Studio Online account, control authorization and identity. We've also been working on compliance and are getting close to ISO certification, EU model clauses soon after that, and we'll continue down sort of our compliance track. Some other things we've been focused on is I think the number one request that I have right now for Visual Studio Online is the ability to customize process templates. Any enterprise with any sophisticated process needs the ability to customize the process. TFS supports a very rich ability to do that. To date, Visual Studio Online has not. So that is something we are actively working on now. And my hope is that early next year, first quarter, let's say, to be able to enable process template customization in VS Online. The other one that kind of goes in the same boat is reporting. People want rich reporting capabilities. TFS has very powerful reporting capabilities, allowing you to use any of the sort of BI technologies from PowerView to analysis services to pick your favorite. VS Online, we have added some very simple charting to make it super easy to get get simple reports. But if you want sophisticated, sort of more involved reports, we don't have a solution with VS Online. So that's sort of the next big thing that we're doing in kind of the enterprise readiness. That's going to be a little further out than first quarter of next year, but sometime over the next year, I expect we'll have that. Of course, another area, Visual Studio has always been known for developer productivity, and in our application lifecycle management tooling, we continue to drive developer productivity, so we've got some cool stuff there that is really close, that is going to start coming out the first thing comes out in December, and I'm excited to give you a preview of some cool stuff that's going to help with developer collaboration and productivity. And then lastly, obviously Scott and Soma made some pretty big announcements around cross-platform support with the .NET Framework announcement, some of the Xamarin partnership things, the Linux debugging, et cetera. Very exciting stuff. Of course, we're going to do some work in our ALM tooling for cross-platform as well, and I'd like to demo a bit of that. So again, I'll turn it over to Brian, and we'll do some demos.
All right. Thanks, Brian. Okay, so what you see now is my own Visual Studio Online account, which Brian has been generous enough to let me try out some of the features his team is developing right now. So you won't have access to this right away, but you'll notice up here we have a new search box. This has been a top customer request. Just allow me to search across all of the code within my repository. I can start by typing to-do. Probably have a lot of to-dos in our source code, so we get a lot of results back. Notice on the left-hand side, we're actually searching across all of my projects and all of my repositories. I can easily scope that down to one particular repository I might care about. We can also say things like, show me just the files that are JavaScript files. And so now we've scoped that down. If we take a look at a couple of these files, we get an instant preview on the right-hand side. Oh, that's a good one. Thank you. Yes, you can clap. Yes. So to do, test better. I'm sure we all have a few of those. Another thing that I can do is actually show off how this is strongly typed, and it actually understands the code in your repositories. So this is the My Shuttle application, so we'll search for driver. Of course, driver shows up in lots of different places, but what I'm really looking for is the class declaration. So what I can say is show me just the class, which is driver, and now it comes back, and that's the declaration for the driver class. So we really understand the code that's in there, and we understand all the different types that you're going to be working with.
And you know, one comment I want to make is hearkening back to kind of the DevOps thing. This is actually in production now. This is running on our Canary instance. And assuming everything works out well, this will roll out into the rest of our production instances over the next month or so.
Awesome. Sounds good. Let me show you another feature that's in the Canary instance right now, which is the ability to just quickly edit a file directly in line. If I want to make simple changes, a lot of customers say, hey, let me just do that straight from the web. So I can say, hello, NYC, and I can hit save. And that's great, just simple changes right in line.
And that save, of course, is actually done a commit to Git or a check-in to Team Foundation version control.
That's right, absolutely. Another thing that many of you might have already started using are the new welcome pages that we have. Welcome pages basically allow you to create markdown that can serve as maybe a README or getting started for the rest of the people on your team who might be onboarding to a particular project. And so this is something that allows us to show off the capability to render a variety of file formats based on what's actually in the file. So as opposed to just showing the markdown text behind the scenes, we're actually rendering this based on what you would expect it to. So those are some fit and finish features that I think everybody is going to love. But before you go off to lunch, I want to show you something that I think is going to be a really big improvement that a lot of people have been asking for. If I switch over to my other account here, you'll notice that I also have a feature flag enabled for what we're calling Build vNext. So this is our next generation of build system. And what I have here is a simple ASP.NET application, which is hosted in a Git repository. And I want to use the Visual Studio Online build service to build this. Now, traditionally, when I wanted to configure my build definition to tell Visual Studio Online how to build my project, I would have had to do that within Visual Studio. A lot of the time, I would have to drop into the Windows workflow editor and edit some complicated XAML. Yeah. It wasn't a great experience. I'm pleased to announce that we will now allow you to actually edit those build definitions directly from the web. And we have a rich library of tasks that I can easily choose from. So we're going to open source all the tasks in here. We'll also take tasks from the community as well. And stringing together your build definition is just a matter of clicking on the tasks that you want. So I'll click on a build task and a test task, and now I'm ready to build my solution. Another thing that we've enabled is the ability for you to easily see the history of all of your builds. So for example, this is a build definition that's evolved over time.
The history of changes to your build definition.
Yes, thank you for clarifying that. The history of the changes to the build definition, I can easily diff that and understand how that build definition is changing over time. So a lot of customers have asked for that ability. Now let's go ahead and queue a build. Now, traditionally, when you queued a build, you would have probably gone to the build results page, and a lot of people just hit refresh, waiting for the status to come back. I'm pleased to announce that due to the magic of Signalar, we're actually going to start streaming the results back in real time directly to the build console. So, yes, thank you. So as soon as a build agent picks this up, you'll actually start to see the results coming back in real time, which I think a lot of people are really, really going to love. I said, there we go. All right. Things always take slower when you're standing on stage, but there you go. Now, that's great if you want to build projects that are hosted on Visual Studio Online. But Brian mentioned this GitHub collaboration that we have. What if you want to build your projects that exist on GitHub, but you want to use the great build service that we have with Visual Studio Online? If I come back to my build definition, you'll notice this repository page. And the first third-party provider that we're onboarding is GitHub. So now it's just a matter of specifying your repository as it exists over on GitHub, and then you can configure continuous integration. So anytime you check in a change over there, it can automatically be built and stored into your drop location on Visual Studio Online. Now, let's talk a little bit about cross-platform. Now, you've always been able to use Visual Studio Online and Team Foundation Server to build anything that you want on Windows. And that includes C++ and .NET projects, and even Android projects, because you can build those on Windows. The one thing we've never been able to help you with is actually building iOS and OS X projects. I'm pleased to announce that we now have a cross-platform build agent that's going to be coming out. And this build agent allows you to install that on a Mac of your choice, and then when you configure your build definition, your build will actually get farmed out to that particular Mac. And so here you can see I have the WordPress iOS application. I have a couple of tasks which say just use Xcode to build this. And I can even call out to any arbitrary shell script as well, which means I can really do anything I want on Linux or on OS X. Yeah. And so at this point, I'm going to go ahead and queue a build. And for the first time publicly, we're going to show you how you can use Visual Studio Online and bring your Mac, configure that to the build service, and then actually kick off a build that's running on OS X. So I think customers are going to love this.
Excellent.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Brian. So, you know, we focused a lot on Mac there, but our new build agent is just a Node.js agent, so it'll run on anything Node.js will run on. It'll run on OS X, it runs on Linux, it runs on anything that Node.js will run on. So that's really cool. The other thing I wanted to mention is Brian only touched on a few of the cool new characteristics of the new build system or the next generation of the build system that we're building. Of course, it'll continue to run all your existing build definitions. We're not breaking compatibility. But another characteristic that I think people are going to be excited about, if you use TFS build, then you know that if you want to go create a build farm, a farm of machines that you're going to do a bunch of builds on, they're now bound to a team project collection, which means I got to set up many farms if I've got a big organization. We've eliminated that restriction also, so now you can have a single large farm serving for lots of teams. Just tons and tons of stuff we've done to address all the feedback that we've gotten on the build system. I'm very, very excited about it. All right, and that kind of wraps up what I had to talk about today. I want to encourage you to go to visualstudio.com, get a Visual Studio Online account, check out the new release management stuff, check out Application Insights on the Azure portal, download the Visual Studio 2015 preview, download Update 4, and if you're an MSDN subscriber, there's a bunch of great stuff up there for you. We have a bunch of new MSDN benefits. Check out your MSDN Azure benefit. So get online and get started. Thank you very much.
Pride in my work is efficiency.
Pride in my work is solving problems.
Pride in my work is attention to detail.
Pride in my work is creating.
Pride in my work is listening to developers.
It's creating a product that doesn't break.
Finishing anything.
Pride in my work is doing things that are magic.
I guess that's what I'd be most proud of, is I can fix just about anything.
Pride in my work is enabling developers.
Pride in my work is connecting people.
Pride in my work is openness.
Pride in my work is giving hope to others.
No more limits.
Helping to measurably improve well-being in the world.
I'm proud to bring water to people.
Pride in my work is saving lives.
Pride in my work is freedom.
Pride in my work is access.